Welcome back to another episode of the Decision Hour. I'm your host, Adam Bird. Folks, I can't even begin to express how excited I am about this interview today. And it's I'm almost not nervous. I don't get nervous, maybe a little bit. But this one here is quite an honor to have this gentleman on with us today. He's a decorated United States Marine Corps combat veteran. He's the co-founder of the Mighty Oaks Foundation, which is dedicated to helping America's military warriors and their families who are suffering from the unseen wounds of combat, such as post-traumatic stress. He's been a pastor, inspirational speaker. He's the author of three books, I believe, March or Die, Leadership by Design, and Path to Resiliency. I hope I said that right. So without further ado, Mr. Jeremy Stalnecker, did I say that right? Did I say your
name? That's it, man. You got exactly right. Yes, thank you for thanks for having me on and for that kind introduction.
Well, welcome to the show. Appreciate your time today. Jeremy, tell the listeners just a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I am the co-founder of the Mighty Oaks Foundation. So my day-to-day work as not only co-founder, but CEO of Mighty Oaks is working with veterans, active duty service members, and first responders, as well as their families. And we have the opportunity to address issues like post-traumatic stress and combat trauma and trauma related to life. And it's funny, trauma is not reserved for veterans, right? We like to take hold of it and pretend it's just ours, but a lot of people struggle. And so we have the opportunity to talk about all of those things, and we have programs that address them. We speak across the country. So that's my day-to-day life, and that's important to me. Probably more important, I'm a husband. My wife and I have been married almost 26 years. Oh, nice. We have four children, two young adult children, and then two teenagers. And yeah, a combat veteran. I mean, it's all, you know, it's all part of who I am, but very thankful for what God has done in my life.
Yeah. When you got, I guess I want to start kind of from the beginning there, when you transitioned out. It mentioned combat veteran. Yeah. We'll leave that, but let's talk about from transitioning out, getting out of the military. What was that transition like, and what prompted you to get into what you're doing today? Did you leave the military and get right into this, or walk us through that process?
Yeah, so you know, I served as an infantry officer in the Marine Corps, and there's kind of a lot wrapped up in that. I grew up in a Christian home. More than that, my dad was a pastor, so I grew up around ministry. And you know, I was very young when I realized, you know, I'm thankful for what my dad does and my parents are into, but that's not what I believe I should be doing. Right. And started pointing my life toward the military. And you know, a number of steps and a number of years later, I was commissioned, served with 1st Battalion, 5th Marines in out of Camp Pendleton, Southern California, and did a number of things while there. But my final deployment was to Iraq in 2003. We were part of the initial invasion into Iraq. So, you know, all that went along with that. So, you know, I'll talk about my transition, but leading up to my transition was a life pointed to doing one thing.
Right.
Thought we missed the war. And it's funny now looking back on it, but we kind of thought like, it's over. You know, we were actually headed to Okinawa for a 31st MEU deployment, which would be a non-combat deployment, right? It's kind of a depressing time. So in the middle of all of that, like, we missed the war. I don't know if I can stay in a peacetime military. Again, crazy looking back, but I thought I need to transition out, and a door opened to leave the Marine Corps and start working at the church that we had been attending on staff and, you know, running some projects and, you know, things like that. And so I had made that decision, and then kind of at the last minute, right, we're not going to Okinawa, now we're going to Kuwait, show a force, and then we breached the berm and went into Iraq, made our way to Baghdad. So all of that happened. So, you know, for me, that's the fulfillment of a lifelong dream, right?
Right.
Is leading Marines in combat. Right. And it's this big historic moment. Now the war's really over, right? We're coming home. It's all done. I mean, the president said mission accomplished, so right, it's all done. And I left the Marine Corps 30 days later. I was working on a church staff, and as good as it sounds like that transition would be, the bottom fell out of my life, and it was anything but good. My wife and I had been married for a few years at the time. We had two young kids, and again, from doing what I had always wanted to do to now doing this job that I was familiar with and familiar to be around, right, the ministry life, but I had no idea how to actually do the job. I felt very unimportant. I had been important, right, and now I'm very unimportant. People don't know who I am or what I've done. You know, my identity was so wrapped up in my service that when I left that, when I put the uniform in the closet for the last time, I really lost who I was. And as silly as it sounds, even working on a church staff, I was very angry, very destructive, abusive, emotionally, probably verbally abusive to the people that I worked with and worked for. I was a complete disaster at home. I mean, you know, reckless at home. And my wife loved me and loved our kids and loved our family enough to fight through that and work through that. But she stayed with me, not because of me, but because of her dedication and focus. But eventually, you know, probably close to a year, 11 months after I left the Marine Corps and started working at this church, my pastor, who loved me and I knew he did, called me into his office and said, "This is just not working anymore. We're going to have to find something else for you to do." And by that, he meant you're going to have to go away and yeah, we'll just help you transition out. So I found myself at that crossroads. I had blamed everyone else for how I felt and how I was behaving, and it was always someone else's fault. And I was confronted with the reality that, you know, all these feelings and emotions and stuff aside, I was responsible for my behavior.
Yeah.
And that began really a long process, several years, long process of accepting responsibility, standing up, moving forward, leading my family, and really allowing other people to speak into my life. And I think fully becoming the person that I was created to be and all that. So that was a really long answer to the transition question, but it wasn't good. And it required real confrontation from people that I know cared about me.
And that's, I think that's, I don't think everybody gets that. Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, I've been out a long time. I've been out a long time. And I remember my transition was, and I was a guard guy. So I was there in 03 for the initial push with the Army. When I stayed in for a few years after that, became a single parent. And then it was like, I was going to reenlist, didn't. And they were just like, "Nope, you're good.
Yeah.
If you need something, call the VA."
Yeah.
And it was just like, right, you know, I was like, "Do I get a t-shirt or something?" "No, nothing. Just go handle your thing." And I remember being angry for so long. You kind of put all those emotions in the back of your head. And I remember thinking, "Oh, well, I'll just focus on my son." That was the thing that kept me alive, quite honestly.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So, when did you, working through all that, recognizing that and working through all that stuff, what got you into doing what you're doing? Well, let me back up a second here. Because I saw in your bio that you became a pastor for a while. What prompted that? I'm very fascinated by that, because I feel like a lot of the times as a Christ follower myself, I feel like that's, you really kind of have to have a calling to do that, or you feel pulled in that direction. Is that the same for you, or how did that come about? Did you wake up one morning and was like, "Hey, this is what I'm going to do"?
No. So again, so when I was in the Marine Corps, I was a Christian. I certainly wasn't mad at God or running from God or anything like that, but I was very focused on my work, very focused on, you know, being a good Marine officer and leading Marines. And that's all I cared about. And that's what I wanted to really focus on. But what I did know was that my family, my wife, my little kids needed to be in a good church. So I knew that. I knew I needed to be in a good church too, but I was gone all the time. You know, it didn't matter. So we found a church and it was a good one. And even though I had always said, I'll never be in ministry, I'll never do that. I watched my parents do that. I know other people who are involved in that. I'll never do that. When I got into a good church, God really started to use that to, I think, bend my heart toward serving others in ministry. Mm. Now, I have a criminal justice degree. I'm an infantry officer, right? So I don't have a Bible degree, and I still don't. I never went to seminary. I still haven't. So I didn't know exactly how I could serve in ministry and not have, you know, that kind of training. But I really did begin to develop a heart for serving through the church, which again is funny, right? Because when I had the opportunity to do it, I about burned it down. But I felt like I had a heart for that, right? And so that was, you know, along conversations with my pastor, and that church at the time was small but growing fast. Had just gotten some property, and he said, "Look, I don't need teachers and preachers. What I need are some people, a person who understands leadership and understands project management, and we're doing all this stuff, and I'll bring you on to do that." So that's what I came on to do. And probably 3 weeks later, I was teaching, I was doing some counseling, right? My marriage literally, I'll say it was falling apart, but it was not in a good place, right, at the very least. And I'm sitting with young military couples counseling them, right? And so in the process of all of that, I kind of worked through that first year. My pastor confronted me. I was at that church for a total of 5 years. So 5 years on staff. When I came to the point where I started taking responsibility for myself, I was able to begin moving forward. And a big part of that for me was really learning from the pastor, learning from other people that were ministering in that church. And I started reading everything I could get my hands on, asking tons of questions. And even though I didn't go to seminary, you know, in a formal setting, I really felt like I got that training there.
Yeah.
And in the process of time, God turned my heart toward pastoral ministry. Yeah. And so I think sometimes we think of a call to ministry and we think of these things, and it is, it's you wake up one morning or you had a vision last night or something, and it's like, well, there's that. That's when it happened. I can't tell you exactly when it happened, but I can tell you that there was a process that God took me through that grew my heart to the place where I realized one day, this is what he's leading me toward.
I'm so glad you shared that. That's such a cool, I like hearing things like that, because I thought there was a time in my life where I thought I would do that, and I just didn't think I was worthy enough to do it. Mm-hmm. I had a purpose to serve, but so from there, from that point, moving into, I want to talk a little bit now about this great foundation, the Mighty Oaks Foundation.
Yeah, yeah.
This is, first off, thank you for what you do. Seriously, this is absolutely amazing. So let's talk about the Mighty Oaks Foundation. For the listeners that don't know, what is it?
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I can talk about my transition to working with Mighty Oaks and for yes. Mighty Oaks too at some point, but I will now if that's okay, because
yeah,
that leads into kind of what is it, right? So I had, as part of my transition, as part of my move forward and take responsibility for my actions and all of those things, I had to, in my heart, kind of walk away from the Marine Corps. You know, I was around a lot of Marines. I was serving at a church right outside of Camp Pendleton, so yeah. I knew a lot of Marines, but I didn't stay in touch with anyone that I served with. I didn't stay connected to that in any way. And then after 5 years of being at that church, I ended up pastoring a church in the San Francisco Bay Area. Okay. So, you know, not a lot of veterans, not a lot of military. And so that chapter of my life was kind of behind me. I was always proud of the fact that I had not only served in that space and brought those young men home. Very thankful for that. Very proud of that. But I was done with that.
Right.
So 10 years after I left the Marine Corps, one of my former Marines reached out to me and said, "Hey, I just met this guy, Chad Robichaux. They were both professional fighters at the time. Chad's a former 4th Recon Marine living in Houston. He's starting this program, and it's for veterans, just getting it off the ground, trying to get some people to come, having a hard time getting people to attend." And so he said, this guy's telling me, he said, "Hey, reach out and see if some of your former Marines will attend this program." So this guy called me and said, "Hey, you interested in doing this?" Absolutely. So I went to this, you know, one of the very first programs of Mighty Oaks, right as it was getting started. Chad is super charismatic and, you know, he's really good at getting people around him, but didn't have any experience in writing curriculums and building programs and doing training and those kind of things. So we met at that program and he said, "Hey, I'm trying to get this thing moving. Would you come alongside and help me?" But it was during that week that I was reunited with about 10 of the Marines that I had served with. And as proud as I had always been of bringing those guys home, it was that week, 10 years later, where I started to hear about suicides, and I started to hear about broken homes, and I started to hear about, you know, destructive families and hopelessness and despair and trauma and all this stuff we talk about now all of the time. That was the first time I was confronted with that.
Yeah.
And I was confronted in that moment with the reality that when we serve, we have a continued responsibility to the men and women that we served with.
Yeah.
I say it like this sometimes. For me, it was this picture of when you put your uniform in the closet for the last time, that doesn't mean your service ends. And I was confronted with what at the time I felt like was me letting those guys down, that I had, you know, I was committed to taking care of them. I was committed to leading them. I was committed to giving them the resources they needed. I was boots on the ground with them. And then I just kind of walked away from them and let them fend for themselves. Now, that's a bit hyperbolic and I know a little dramatic, but that was how I felt in that moment.
Right.
And so the pull to me was, I have gone through this. I've learned some things. I have some resources. And I have an obligation, not just an opportunity, but an obligation to share that with others who are struggling the same way. And so when I had the opportunity to do that, we started doing it, and we've been doing it since 2012.
It's an incredible program. I can, we were talking offline kind of jokingly, I need to get there myself.
Yeah. I'm going to send you an application.
Thank you. but I recently, one of my business partners and a very, very close friend of mine went through the program 2 years ago. Mm. And, he called me. He's like, "Hey, I'm going to be gone for this week, whatever, blah, blah, blah." Came back and it was like night and day difference with him. And it was, it was so cool to hear everything that he got to experience and stuff. So I really like that. Before I go any further though, Jeremy, you have a website. Let's, so the listeners that are listening, they want to reach out to you. They want to follow you on your socials, or if they want to look at the books and purchase one of the books. What's the website that they can get you?
Yes. So I'll give you two, if that's okay.
Please.
If you're interested in Mighty Oaks programs, go to mightyoaksprograms.org, mightyoaksprograms.org. And I'll say this quickly. We have almost every week, we have a program taking place somewhere in the country. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely free. There's no cost to attend and there is no cost for travel. We cover all of those costs and we just want you to apply. You can do that on that website. For me, you can go to my name, jeremystalnaker.com. And there you can, there's a link back to Mighty Oaks page, all of my socials. There's a blog, some podcasts I'm involved with and some books that you can take a look at as well. So if you only remember one, remember my name and you'll get to all of that, but that's all there. And again, my commercial for Mighty Oaks is we do all the work. All you have to do is sign up and give us a week and then we'll take it from there. That's for anyone.
Right. So, folks, we're going to have all of that information in the show notes after the show here as well. But listen, if you're listening to us right now, it means you're already on the internet. Just go ahead and open up another browser.
Yeah, do it.
And take a crack at it.
That's it.
Jeremy, I want to transition here into some of the books. You're an author as well. What prompted you to write a book? Which was the first book that you wrote?
Yeah. The first book that I wrote was that book called March or Die, which is also the title of my podcast. And that name comes from a story. And that entire book is stories of events that took place while we were in Iraq, things that happened.
Oh, wow.
And then I take those and make a spiritual application. So instead of just telling a story, I then take that and here are the lessons learned, right? Here's how you can move forward in your life. And that phrase march or die came from a very specific incident where we were caught, we were ambushed. And in those moments, really, you know, in real life or figuratively, when we've been ambushed, we have to make a decision. Are we going to stay where we are and die? Or are we going to march, putting one foot in front of the other and moving on to the next thing? And so that was the first book I wrote. And that book was written really, it started as a series of blog posts that I just wrote because I needed to kind of process through some of those events. And a lot of people reached back out to me and talked about how it had helped them. And so it became a book. And It's probably the book that really reflects kind of my view of the world and how I think about things and how I feel about things. And so that's been great. Then I wrote a book on leadership, the book Leadership by Design. That was me trying to struggle through what does real leadership look like? I've been exposed to what I would say is maybe disingenuous, like servant leadership, you know, people kind of manipulating others to get what they want. I've been around super type A Marine Corps leadership. I've seen all these models. Well, what does the Bible say about leadership? And so I walked through that, and that was kind of just a personal journey for me. And then I, you know, put it down on paper. But then for us at Mighty Oaks, we want to provide resources. And so we write these books that are, I've got one here. It's small, about 10,000 words. You can probably sit and read it in an hour, you know, an hour and a half. It's not long. But wrote a book on resiliency, what it means to be resilient. Wrote a book on, we call it The Truth About PTSD. We just produced one called Not the Solution on the topic of veteran suicide. And so all of those are available on our website as free downloads. So anything we produce, anything I produce certainly is intended to be a resource that can be helpful to you. And so that's become very important for us is providing resources that others can use. Because I know not everyone's going to attend a program as much as we want them to. A lot of folks who are really struggling and need to be in a program aren't yet in a place in their life where they could, you know, make that decision. And so some of these resources can push them there.
I was going to ask you, like, what's stopping people from doing it? Like, you know, I got out in 06, 07, didn't have a fraction of the resources back then are out there now. And it's like, I tell people, veterans and not just veterans, you know, our parent network is Heroes Media Group, Heroes, Community Heroes, first responders, law enforcement, et cetera, educators, clergy pieces and stuff as well. Those that are suffering, it's like, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong with this, Jeremy, but does pride get in the way a lot of the times when it comes to, well, I don't really need that or whatnot. And then you just continue to, I mean, is that safe to say that?
Yeah, pride is huge. I mean, you know, when I talk about my transition, a lot of people say, well, that was post-traumatic stress. Just as you mentioned, 2003, we weren't talking about trauma or post-traumatic stress or any of these things, right? So looking back, it probably was some of that. I mean, I literally left Iraq, leading Marines in combat, and 30 days later, I'm on a church staff, right? Like, there's no process to decompress what happened. So trauma is a real part of that. But when I really dig into that, and I've had plenty of time to do that, that's exactly what it was. It was pride. It was just, you know, the arrogance of of me. And I didn't get help because I felt like everybody else was the problem and I was not the problem. And so I think that is a major, major obstacle, the obstacle of pride. I think another obstacle is fear. What will have to change? What will I be confronted with?
Yeah.
What are they going to dig up, right? Fear. What's going to happen in my life if I begin to take these steps forward? I think some of it, too, just being honest, is exhaustion. I've tried everything. I've done everything. I've done all this stuff before, and it hasn't worked, and I just don't know that I can do one more thing. So I think it's a lot of things. Pride is certainly...
Yeah.
I had to prioritize, that's the biggest one.
I love that you said the other two as well. Like the last one is just like, I've tried it. It's exhausting.
It's exhausting. Yeah.
But at the same time, you gotta, here's the other thing. I think you gotta recognize that if you want to change or you want to get through whatever it is you're going through.
Yeah.
You know, when you became a Marine or when I became a soldier, it wasn't just like, here, you're now a Marine, Jeremy, or here, Adam, you're now a soldier. Like, there was a training process that you have to go through. And I think one of the things that Adam's personal opinion is we have fallen short on the transitioning side of things when people are getting out hey, let's train them to get back into the day-to-day life of what they expect getting out of the military.
Yeah.
Again, my opinion.
But. No, that's exactly right. And I think we are, as a community, we're very responsive to what happens. And so we try to respond to suicidal ideation, we respond to depression, we respond to bad behavior because of trauma, we respond to all of that. And what we need to do fundamentally in transition is provide a foundation that people can build their life on.
Yeah.
You know, we're a faith-based program. We're not ashamed of that. And what that means, though, and it means a lot of different things to different people. We believe that, you know, there is a creator, that he has a plan and a purpose for us. And we just need to learn how to move toward that.
Amen.
But fundamentally, we have to build our lives on a foundation that's not about us, right? It's about that God, that creator that has a plan for us. If we're standing on the right foundation, then a lot of these other things can help us. We don't have to be reactive. That's what resilience is about. It's about putting the pieces in place so that when those storms come into your life, those challenges come into your life, you may get knocked down, but you're able to recalibrate. You're able to get back up because you already have the right foundation. You've already made the right decisions and you can walk through these things. We are so bad about equipping men and women who are leaving the military to deal with real life. Medical, we have a class on finance, you know, we talk about all this stuff and it's all helpful.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, who are you?
Right.
When you leave the military?
Yeah.
Who are you if you're not wearing a uniform? Who are you at those quiet moments when no one else is around? Who are you? And we've got to answer these questions and build that foundation so we can build a life.
For somebody that's listening, that's hearing what you're saying, that are asking themselves right now, who am I?
Yeah.
What do you tell them?
Well, I definitely tell them that you're more than a uniform, a rank, a job, a title. You're more than the people that you're around. Again, believing in what I would call a biblical worldview, or a worldview that starts with God, the creator. Mm. I say that way intentionally because if he created, then there is purpose, there is design, and we can lead to the next thing. There is hope. Hopelessness comes into a life when we don't understand our identity and we don't have purpose. Well, purpose and identity come in understanding who God created us to be.
Okay. So getting on that path, because I hear it weekly.
Oh, yeah.
It's hopeless. It's hopeless. And yeah. I'm at a point now in my life, I'm a little more seasoned in age.
Sure.
Where I'd like to say I'm a little wiser is there's hope for anything. It's a mindset, and you can twist it and fit it however you want.
Yeah.
But you know, I think first and foremost, if you believe and have faith, right, then it's possible. Anything's possible.
Yeah.
Like, and I got asked earlier today, well, how do you know? I was like, because I believe that there's a God. I believe that Jesus died on the cross for my sins.
Yeah.
That's my personal, it doesn't work for everybody. It works for me.
Sure.
Works for me. And because of that, there's nothing, it's written that I don't need to worry about anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that gives me hope.
That's right. I
don't have to have the answers because the answers are already there. You just need to know where to look.
Yeah. And you know, the reality is trauma and the difficulties of the past and bad decisions, all that stuff, it's still there. You don't get over it, right? You don't forget it. But when you begin to move toward the person God created you to be, you know, doing the things he's called us to do and putting those bricks in place to build the life that he's equipped us to live, that stuff in your past, it's not that it goes away, but it does not keep you bound anymore. Right. You're not a slave to it anymore. It's a part of your story, but it's not the whole story.
Right.
Because you're moving toward something wonderful and filled with hope, one step at a time. That's why I use that analogy of March. It's not running. It's not, you know, I have it all figured out. It's I'm putting one foot in front of the other and moving toward the person I was created to be.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Again, folks, if you're listening, you're already online. Open up another browser. Go to Jeremy's website. We'll have all this stuff in the show notes after the show and stuff as well. Jeremy, we're coming up on time. I got another question for you, though, before we let you go.
Yeah.
The show's called The Decision Hour.
Yep.
Name a time in your life where your feet are on the line and you have to make that decision. What is it? And what's the atmosphere like at the time?
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of those times. I think probably the most critical moment of decision for me was in kind of that story that I told at the beginning during my transition, when the entire world was behind, was against me, things were blowing up around me, and it was everyone else's fault. And I was confronted, right? I was confronted by someone that I knew loved me and cared about me. I had a decision to make in that moment that I think was going to alter my life one way or the other. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I could either decide to continue to blame everybody else for my problems and become a victim of my circumstance, or decide to take full responsibility for the things I could be responsible for. I have a friend that says we're not always 100% responsible, but even if you're only 10% responsible, be 100% responsible for that 10%. And it was in that moment when I was confronted with the truth that I was being, you know, an ass, completely out of control, and I was the one who needed to stand up and be responsible. It was in that moment. And again, I didn't understand the gravity of it at the time, but the decision to say, I need to humble myself and be responsible for my part of this and let someone else lead me forward, it changed everything in my life.
That's amazing. Jeremy, I appreciate your time today, and thank you wholeheartedly for everything that you do.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. Folks, we're going to have all of Jeremy's information in the show notes again below. Also, before we let you go, make sure you go check out our parent network, Heroes Media Group. Simply go to heroesmediagroup.com. Check out all the other new podcasts that are out there, as well as some of the new articles that are coming up. That's all the time we have today. Until next time, you've been listening to The Decision Hour.